Powell, reel number one. Were you in the service at the outbreak of war?
I was in the Duke of Lancaster's yeomanry, and I joined them on the 3rd of August, 1913. On the 3rd of August, 1914, exactly 1 year afterwards, we were mobilized, and on the 4th of August, war was declared. The main thing was, at that time, to try and get out to France. Everybody wanted to get out, and everybody knew that the war would be over by Christmas. After I had been with the yeomanry, still in Lancashire, after some months...
What were you actually doing with the yeomanry after mobilisation?
I was touring from Bolton, all the various towns in Lancashire, with the horses. And time went on, and I could see that the yeomanry would never get out to France before Christmas, so I transferred to the Manchester Regiment. I went to Manchester, and I joined them. But again, by November, we had no possible hope of getting out to France before Christmas. And at that time, round came a circular to most battalions asking for volunteers or observers for the Royal Flying Corps. I volunteered and in due course went into the Royal Flying Corps. One point is that at that time as an observer, one's weight had to be 10 stone or less. Anybody over 10 stone was rejected.
When you volunteered for the RFC, did you know exactly what it was you were volunteering for?
Not at all. My only interest was that it was a way to get out to France.
Did RFC mean anything to you?
Nothing at all. I'd never seen an aeroplane close to.
Yes. So there was no sense of wanting to fly or anything like that?
None whatever. None whatever. And then when I got down to my 10 stone, I was... transferred to the Royal Flying Corps. I went down to Farnborough, where I reported, to Major Shepherd.
Was transferring from the Manchester Regiment into the RFC a straightforward affair?
Well, what they had done was to ask for volunteers, one officer from each battalion. There were two of us who wanted to volunteer. One man, whose name was Knowles, was at the top of the list, and I would have been the second to go. They only wanted one, and Knowles told me that he didn't want to volunteer because he was engaged to a girl. And so, if we were asked for one from the battalion, he would stand down. In point of fact, when the moment arrived, he didn't stand down, he went. But by great good luck, they wanted another officer from our battalion, and so I went. When I'd reported to Farnborough... Stop.
Did you begin to train as an observer as soon as you got to Farnborough?
Well, no, I didn't. I went as an observer, but after I'd been there 2 days, I was immediately put down as orderly officer, which meant that I had to go and report to the adjutant at 6 o'clock in the evening, take my bed and sleep in the adjutant's office all night in case the telephone went. And as I reported, the colonel called the adjutant into his office. The adjutant went, leaving the door ajar. I didn't want to eavesdrop, but I heard the adjutant say, "We've got another officer called Knowles who's been posted to us." And the colonel said, "Is he an observer or a pilot?" And the adjutant said, "He's an observer." And the colonel said, "Oh, we don't want any more observers. We've got nothing but observers." The adjutant said, "Well, what shall I do with him?" The colonel said, "Send him back to his regiment." And that was the end of Knowles. It also frightened me, so that the first thing in the morning at 8 o'clock, I reported to the adjutant and I said, "Is there any chance, sir, of me being able to learn to fly, to become a pilot?" And to my astonishment, where I thought he was going to say, "Oh, no, certainly not," he said, "Really? Do you want to become a pilot?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Oh, good lad. Then start away. We'll put you down as a pilot."
So they transferred you?
So they transferred me, and I became a pilot.
What did training at Farnborough involve?
Well, it involved the learning apart from dual instruction on the aeroplane, which was the Morris Farman Longhorn. It also brought in learning Morse code, and the way we learnt that was quite useful, because normally there was one large hut in which all the pupils used to congregate when there was no flying. There was no flying on many, many occasions. It would be too bumpy. It was a little bit too rough. And you could only go when the weather was really calm. And so we sat for long times with these electric little buzzers to learn Morse code, ostensibly. What we did was to smoke cigarettes and talk, until he suddenly found that nobody knew anything about Morse. As a result, instead of going into the hut and just going beep, 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 bzz, bzz, went everybody else, we suddenly thought, well, now we won't tell all these smutty stories other than through the buzzer. And as soon as we got to a four-letter word, we found it was very easy to write down the answer. And we told all our stories on Morse. Anybody who spoke during that session had to put half a crown into the box. And it was very good. In no time at all, we all learnt our Morse. Alphabet was good. And we learnt a lot of things, like the difficult words like Q, L, F. Well, L was quite easy. Q was easy. Q was God save the Queen. And there you've got it. Dash, dot, dash, dash, dot, dot. And when it comes to L and F were awkward ones. We learnt those because F was da-da-da-da, which was get your hair cut. L, of course, was da-da-da-da, get out of it. And eventually you don't listen for dots and dashes, you just hear the thing talking to you, get your hair cut, get out of it. And when you got to that stage, you could say, I know Morse, and I can pick it up and read it and hear it. Now, as for the actual flying, various instructors would take us up. At that time, the pilots were all officers. No NCOs flew, but there was at Farnborough the one and only sergeant pilot. It used to astound me to see a man with three stripes wearing wings, and his name was Strugnell. He finished the service, I believe, and was retired as a group captain. Well, Strugnell took me up more than anybody else, and eventually I did my first solo. After 4 hours duel.
Do you remember exactly how, as a complete novice, Strugnell first introduced you to aeroplanes and the first basic lessons and tips that he gave you? What did he do exactly?
Well, he just sat behind me in this dual control, Morris, and he flew the machine while I lightly put my hands on the controls. And he talked. We had no intercom in those days, and so the conversation was shouting over the noise of a rattling engine. And it's very difficult to hear it. Sign language was very useful. And in fact, I think the most useful sign was the Harvey Smith.
What was that sign?
That's the one he gave when he won
the
jump.
How long did the dual instruction with Strugnell carry on?
I did 4 hours dual before I was sent solo by myself, which was a terrifying experience, and only after Strugnell had left me alone in the machine did I realise that I knew nothing at all about it, and I didn't even know what the controls did. But it was quite terrifying. I went up, and eventually I flew back over the golf course at Farnborough. I was about 1,000 feet up, and I looked over the side and I saw two people on the golf course standing and looking up, because aeroplanes were quite an unusual feature. And I looked over the side and I thought to myself, You know, if you knew who was in this damn thing, you'd be running for cover. But I had to get down. And the one thing I had been told was not to bang the throttle open because I'd choked the engine. And, of course, as I was gliding in over the AID sheds onto the aerodrome...
What does AID mean?
Aircraft Inspection Department.
Thank you.
And I found that I was undershooting. In other words, I was going to hit one of the hangars instead of getting over them. So in my panic, I did what I shouldn't have done. I jammed open the throttle suddenly, but the Lord being on my side, the engine picked up, and I bounced up over that shed, came in and did a fairly reasonable landing. My instructor, of course, Strugnell, was watching, and all flying was cut off because he thought that there'd been a terrible bump of air, an upward current, and so he thought it wasn't safe for the rest of the flying. I hadn't the nerve to tell him it was me, so there's no more flying that morning.
What aircraft were you trained on at Farnborough?
I was trained on a Morris Farman Longhorn. And the Longhorn was... There were two Morris Farman types. One was the Longhorn, the other was the Shorthorn. The difference between them being that the Longhorn had an elevator in front as well as at the back. That was rather useful to a nervous pupil because he could see, by looking at the elevator, whether it was going up or down. But when he graduated and went onto the Shorthorn, then, of course, this unfortunate pilot had nothing to show him except some rough idea as to whether he was going up or down. And it was most essential because if you went up too steeply, you stalled and lost your flying speed, and that's the end of your training and presumably of your life. But...
Were there any memorable characters at Farnborough while you were there?
Oh, yes. I think the most memorable of the lot was a man called Gordon Bell. And Gordon Bell, I believe, was the originator of most of the Royal Flying language. He was the fellow who invented all sorts of words for sharp turns, and he described our uniform, which, if you remember, the Royal Flying Corps tunic was a double-breasted affair, which was promptly called a maternity jacket. And very useful it was, because no collar or tie was needed. So for an early patrol, all one had to do was to leave the pyjama top on, put your tunic on, hook the collar round, and immediately you were fully dressed, and nobody could say what you'd got underneath at all. One thing I remember about Gordon Bell, he suffered from terrible stammering. And he did a crash. He crashed in the country one day, and a policeman came up and said, "Have you had an accident, sir?" And Gordon Bell said, "No, you bloody fool. I always land like this."
Any other examples of the kind of terminology and vocabulary that Bell introduced?
Yes, I think he was responsible for a very famous RFC word, which is supposed to illustrate a very sharp turn. He used to call a sharp turn, split-ass turn. That word has seemed to live with the RAF until it became normal language. If one did anything suddenly and quickly, you did a split-ass turn. Another great character, of course, was the head of the Royal Aircraft Factory, a brilliant engineer, an Irishman, called Mervyn O'Gorman. When he first put on uniform, his first uniform, he was a full colonel. I went into his office one day. It was a large office. His desk was in the middle. And hanging over the desk from the ceiling was a conrod from an engine on a piece of string. At first I thought it must be a light switch. But when I looked, I saw it was fixed on the ceiling with a drawing pin. So I asked him, "What is that?" And he said, Well, Poirel, he said, I, as you know, am an engineer. I hang that in front of my eyes as an example of the most marvellous craftsmanship, and I hope one day we will be able to equal it. Another thing about Farnborough was, of course, there was no officers' mess, there were no mess buildings. There was only this packing case in which we sat to do our mess. Everybody lived in ordinary digs in the town, and so we were separated. There was no community feeling at all between the pupils, only when we went and told our stories in this packing case. But there was nothing until there were buildings. It would have been useless to try and get up any sort of unit camaraderie, and otherwise it was just a school learning to fly.
How long were you at Farnborough?
Well, just long enough to do sufficient solo flying to qualify for my ticket, which was the Royal Aero Club ticket, which was rather nice, as it was rather like a passport, and it asked everybody in the world to help you, and wherever you were, look after it. It was written in French and English, and it hadn't got any French that I knew, no plume de motante, but it was a ticket. Now, that didn't qualify one to be a pilot. You had to get your wings, and for that I was posted to Netheravon.